Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a positive difference in the world. We explore many important aspects and areas of life, including business, sales, physical, mental, relationships, disabilities, and many more important and interesting topics. Our broadcast team so far consists of outstanding people from both Canada and the U.S., including several Napoleon Hill certified instructors and authors. My name is Tom Tuttle Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly newsletter. And I spoke in March of this year at the 2012 Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who was the keynote speaker for that event. I have had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now. And in that time, I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced and been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1". Sometimes I lie and say 5'2", and that's due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. I'm also a senior research director for the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication, and we are the official and only media partner of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find out more about me at my website, which is Tom, the number 2, and Tall, TALL.com. I'm excited to have as my guest today Cindy O'Neill. And I met Cindy a few years ago while we were both being trained by the Arthritis Society to lead their arthritis self-management programs. Cindy, like her music, is an infusion. The indie artist's mixing of musical genres defies easy categorization and reflects her proclivity for improv. Starting her performance career at age 18, doing improv theater in Ottawa, Cindy solidified what she already knew: life's an improvisation, a creative response to events unforeseen. In 1991, to expand her film and TV pursuits, Cindy began singing professionally. Her September 1994 move to Calgary led to a busy performance schedule with multiple television and special event appearances, quickly establishing herself in the local music scene. Cindy's easy, interactive rapport with her audience makes her equally at ease performing at private parties, clubs, or the national anthem. In July 1999, she marked the onset of a long-term life-altering health challenge that bulldozed her life and career to a halt. It took over 2 years of dealing with intense full-body pain, muscle atrophy, physical disability, and weight loss before being diagnosed, like myself, with severe systemic rheumatoid arthritis in October 2001. In the 14 years that Cindy's been living with rheumatoid arthritis, she has continued on her creative path in any way that her health allows. Her 2006 recording of What We Are touches on the impact chronic illness has on her body, mind, and spirit. A partial list of her eclectic results includes in 2000, Living Right from her CD Flight, aired in 2 Caitlin's Way episodes, which is a CDN TV series. In 2000, she was a stand-in in the Italian-Canadian feature film Almost America. In 2002, she wrote and self-published the book Icicle Hands and Icicle Knees. In 2002, she was chosen as Femme Music May Artist of the Month. In 2004, she co-wrote and did the vocals on 2 soundtrack tunes of The Girl Who Married a Ghost, which was on a Canadian feature-length film. And in 2005, she was casted in Paul Brandt's video, Leaving, and a cameo in his video, Home. 2011, she had an ebook release of Before the Mist, a selection of her poetry, lyrics, and the stories behind them. And in 2011, she recorded and released Wings in Flight, a duet that she co-wrote with Canadian artist Sora. And in 2012, she launched Vocal Vibes podcast, celebrating neat and uplifting people and projects across Canada. Welcome to the show today, Cindy.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm amazing, but I am getting better.
It's great to talk with you. Thanks for inviting me.
It is exciting to speak with and share with my audience with someone else who, like myself, has experienced the ravages of rheumatoid arthritis. And over the past few months, we've been sharing by email, you've been in the middle of an arthritis attack. And tell people a little bit about what that is like when arthritis flares up. I share it with my audiences, and you and I both know it is an extremely unpleasant experience that pretty well stops you from doing whatever you're doing.
Yes, ravages is a great word to use. This year has been pretty much a write-off for me. Things started going south in March, and by September, I was pretty much disabled. I ended up being hospitalized quite unexpectedly by my rheumatologist. I had to go down to Newmarket, Ontario. That's where my rheumatologist is. And it was just a routine visit. And within 3 minutes of arriving in his office, he was making phone calls to the hospital and to a retina specialist. And within a couple of hours, I was in the hospital. So that gives an idea of how serious things were. My right eye, I have sclerosis, as it turns out, which is very rare. And the doctors were wanting to take pictures of my eyeball and showing everyone, all of their students, et cetera, because it is so rare and extremely painful. That explains why I had wanted to rip my eyeball out of my head for most of the year. But yes, I just cannot say enough how absolutely brutal arthritis is. Living with rheumatoid arthritis has ended my music career pretty much, and it has been a moment by moment struggle many days. Some days it's hard just to breathe, getting dressed, doing the most simple task, the most basic thing can be excruciatingly painful and physically near impossible. And then when you're not in a flare and when things are going okay, you feel like a normal person. Sometimes I feel like an Olympian, you know, and I can do what I would normally, you know, do to a lesser extent. But it's invisible. To look at me, you would never know I have this disease. In fact, I was out today doing a number of errands and having some meetings, and that's all I heard all day. Oh my gosh, you look so healthy. You look great. You'd never know. You're too young. It's like, oh my goodness. I've heard that so much for the last 14 years, but that's the nature of the disease, is that it's invisible. It ravages, and it's excruciating.
Yes, I totally know about that, and the eye arthritis just really, really, really unusual. I had a friend diagnosed with it a few years ago, and I thought she was a bit batty or her doctor was a bit nutty, because I had never heard of such a thing, because people associate arthritis and generally associate it with joints. And as far as I know, there's no joint in the eye. So having arthritis of the eye is extremely rare and unusual. And so now I know two people in my whole life that have been diagnosed with that.
Well,
crazy.
My rheumatologist and his intern student asked me permission to use the photos in medical books. That's how rare it is. So I'm going to be in medical books, and hopefully those pictures will help doctors to come diagnose this sooner, because my eye was so far gone, it nearly perforated. And it's still kind of touchy. I'm still on the watch list, but I'm knocking on wood right now. Hear me, and hopefully it'll all turn out great.
Now let's go back to your amazingly great career, because so many people dream and wish and hope for a career where they appear in movies. You've appeared in Paul Brandt. I love Paul Brandt. You've appeared in music videos, and you've done music for films, movies. How did you get started in that? Because as I said, you know, most, you ask a 16-year-old or most kids these days, at some point in their life, they're dreaming of being in movies or being in a movie video or singing on various projects. How did you get involved in that? Because lots of people try and not very many people succeed at that.
And there's a good reason for that. It's a really, really hard career path. If you want to constantly be judged and critiqued and told next, then this is the right career for you. The entertainment industry, music, film, etc. It's a hard road. I wanted to get involved in theater as a young child, and I started doing so. In high school, I took drama, and then out of high school, I got involved in some improv theater and then followed on from there. But really, what got me wanting to be in the music industry was that I came from a large family, and my parents both worked full-time. They had six kids, and I thought, well, if I can do well in the music industry, if I can, you know, be a successful singer or actor or something, then I could help my parents and my family. So that was one of my main motivators to get into the industry, other than being a totally silly person and just loving to, I seem to jump into things and take risks a lot. But yeah, you have to have a lot of staying power, and there's a lot of luck involved. Unfortunately, I haven't had that much luck because my health changed when I was really gaining momentum in my career, and everything sort of just stopped from there. But it's an exciting lifestyle, I would say. But you really have to just know that no matter how many people say no to you, you are going to find a way.
And that's one of the keys to success that I talk about, and as well many salespeople know, you have to get used to rejection and being told no. And so even though you have an amazing list of credits of film and music and movie credits and TV credits, probably the list is three times as long of the ones that told you next or you're not good enough or please don't call us again.
Go away now.
yes. Enough of you. And so what is that like to have to get used to just brutal critiques like that where you're just, you think you did something amazing and you're just told next?
Yeah, especially when you really want a part. There were so many parts that for commercials or film that I thought, oh, I could really do this. And then to be told no, or sometimes you don't even get told, you know, they don't pick you and your agent doesn't hear for weeks. And then it's like, okay, obviously I didn't get that gig. But it's not something you get used to, really. It's not something I got used to. And it's very wearing because you walk into a room, you're told you have an audition, your agent gets you an audition, and you get, hello. Oh, sorry, I heard a beep. So you walk into a room and you've learned your part and you've done, you know, you have your headshot and you're all prepared, and then there's 40 or 50 other people for the same part, and you're looking around the room and they all seem to look better than you. It's like, oh my gosh. And it can be a real mind game. But at the same time, when you do when you do get that one part out of six auditions, that, you know, it spurns you on. And creative sorts understand what I'm talking about. It's like when you're writing a book or a song or anything creative, there are points where you seem to be fighting with yourself about, okay, why am I putting myself in?
Hello? We're having technical difficulties, and hopefully Cindy will call in shortly, as the line just died on the call here. So let's hold on for a little bit, and hopefully she will call in again shortly. Welcome back,
Cindy. Hi there.
Cindy.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah, the call dropped on the end here. So you're on? Are you on a cell or on a internet-based line at all?
I'm on cell because my internet-based line isn't working.
Yeah, exactly. So cell lines sometimes drop. So, yeah, now let's talk a little bit about living with arthritis. Not everybody understands, as you said, for yourself, it's an invisible illness. People who see me can see that my joints are fused and I limp, have a pronounced limp. And so it's fairly obvious to people who meet me that I have some sort of a disability. And after having it so long, unlike yourself, when I'm not in the middle of an attack, I have five or six joints that hurt every day enough that probably 95% of people would stay home from work. Mm-hmm. Now, I was telling someone the other day, or talking to an arthritis sufferer the other day, and we were talking about how a lot of people don't understand the fatigue part of the disease. They equate it with the pain, but fighting pain takes a ton of energy, doesn't it?
It takes immense ongoing energy, and it affects everything. It affects your appetite. It affects how you think, how you speak. There's been so many times throughout the last 14 years where I can't say words properly. They'll come out completely backwards. I can't remember things at all. And I know a number of people are experiencing those sorts of things now, but the amount of energy it takes to deal with pain, and I'm like you, there are part joints that are just constantly grumpy, I say, beyond grumpy. I mean, it's 24/7, even when I'm sleeping. I really don't like taking painkillers, that sort of thing. When it gets too crazy, I will take something, but every day I hurt somewhere or a number of somewheres. And that it's like having a knife stuck in a part of you, and you've got to walk around and do your job, and you've got to do everything as if it's not there. And it's so challenging. But that's what it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you, it's like, who knows why this is happening, but this is what's happening. So I feel blessed to be functional. I feel blessed to have made it this far. And, you know, you just got to grit your teeth sometimes and walk through it.
Exactly. Now, one of the things that it is the very, very, very hardest on is relationships. And I hear from people, as you probably do in the arthritis self-management program courses that we lead, and 70% of people who do get arthritis are women. I hear a lot from wives and mothers that Perhaps their husband doesn't understand the fatigue part, where they're not able to do all the things they used to do previously. The women also feel really horrible often about not being able to be the type of mother they were previously because of the pain and the fatigue and not being able to participate fully in their children's lives. And I know you have an amazing man in your life, and yet at the same time I know from some email exchanges that, you know, it has been extremely, not extremely, but it's certainly been a challenge and a difficulty in your relationship, hasn't it?
Well, this year more so than any, I've been in actually pretty good shape physically, health-wise, since my fiancé and I got together. And then for when my health started failing in March, between March and September, it was a massive eye-opener for my fiancé, because he had no idea what this disease could do. And I had said to him early on in our relationship, I hope you never see what this can do to me. And through this past summer, through the spring, the summer, and into the fall, there were times he had to dress me. He had to help me to the bathroom. He became my caretaker, and he did it with such grace and love. He's absolutely incredible. But I could see the toll it was taking on him, the shock, the terror of, you know, inside the back of the brain, oh my gosh, what if she doesn't get better? Like, what if this is our future? And you know that they're thinking that, and you're thinking that too. I'm so grateful that in our relationship we speak about those things. And it's okay for him to be afraid. It's okay for him to be angry. And we had some very challenging moments, but we were able to get through them because he loves me genuinely, and because he can see the effort I'm making. You know, even on days where I could barely move, I would still make an effort to do something because, you know, I want to. I want to participate in life. I'll be honest, there were many times through the summer where death would have been an invite. You know, it would have been a relief. And I say that very seriously. That's how the state I was in. But, you know, in a relationship, all I can say for people who are living with chronic illness and pain and in a partnership with someone who doesn't experience that, please just speak honestly and gently to each other, because really that's all you have. You only have each other, and life is every little moment with each other. So on those days where you haven't slept because you're in agony and your partner hasn't slept because you can't stop moving because of the pain and everybody's grumpy, just remember that, you know, it's an illness and it's not you, and that it's as scary for the other person as it is for you.
Exactly.
That's how we handle it.
Exactly. And in life you find as well that where often you are people experience horrible things, there's also blessings within those horrible experiences. And I know in my case, having got it at age 5, that my family was a tremendous, tremendous blessing. You know, my dad knows about 10 different ways to carry me up and downstairs. And, you know, one of my sisters would sit at the end of a couch just waiting for me to ask to change the channel. This was the day when you had to change channels by yourself.
Right.
Go get me a drink, or prop a pillow here, or grab me this pill. And so.
And after a while, it gets hard to do that, doesn't it? You know, and that's another
thing. You don't
thing.
Like to ask. Yeah.
No. And I'm one of these people that I'm very self-sufficient, which having this disease has been hard because of that. So, you know, I don't want to, in my relationship, you know, there were times this summer where it was hard to ask. But, you know, I had to do it, because otherwise I would have probably fallen down or made things worse. But yeah, you exactly. really have to ask.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I've had to get better at and learn myself, because if you don't ask, you're actually depriving people of an opportunity to help, and people love to help. And I tell a story when I talk. In high school, one of her friends said, "It looks like Tom has trouble getting up and down those stairs. Should I offer to help him?" And she told the girl that, "Please don't do that, because he'll go right back up those stairs and go down on his own just to show you that he's able to do it." And so that was exactly how I used to be. If you offered me help, I would just go back and do it myself just to show that I could do it and didn't need help. And so that's something that, yeah, when you have it, don't be shy to ask people, because people love to help other people, and by depriving them of that, you're depriving them of something important to them, and also, and as we know, being stubborn and not allowing them to do that makes life a lot more difficult for us.
Indeed.
Now let's talk about, because I just came back from a group trip and a number of people were on the trip were from the U.S. One of the amazing blessings that I tell people is like winning a global lottery is being born in Canada. I've been in hospital 40 times. The only thing I've ever paid for is to rent the television, and that is an option. You don't have to rent the television. And yet people who would experience what we have with four hip, in my case, four hips, four knees, and two shoulders replaced, I would not be insurable in the U.S. There was a company wanted to hire me, but they said we may probably can't get insurance, and if we do, it would be like $3,000 to $5,000 a month. And so what a blessing, isn't it? And though Americans are telling me, yes, but you have to wait for surgeries and go on waiting lists, and that's kind of a small price to pay when you can go into, as you did, a doctor's office, and while you're sitting there, they're making arrangements for you to get into the hospital, and you don't have to say, "Hold on, let me check my bank balance or my insurance company." You know, so talk about that a little bit, because it is a global blessing, our medical system, isn't it?
Yes, I've had to be hospitalized twice in 14 years because of this, and both times were emergency situations. And if it, especially the first time, I was in much worse shape. If I hadn't have been hospitalized, I probably wouldn't be here, because rheumatoid arthritis can affect your organs, and by the time I was hospitalized in 2001, it was affecting my organs. My stomach had shut down. So being in Canada is a huge blessing, and I'm grateful for that. That's one of the reasons why on my show, my Vocal Vibes podcast, I celebrate Canada and you know, the people that are doing good things in Canada because of that. It's like we have such a wonderful country, and we should really celebrate that.
Exactly. Now tell us a little bit more about that Vocal Vibes podcast and some of the interesting and neat and uplifting people that you have interviewed, and maybe even why you decided to start that podcast.
Well, I had wanted to do it for a number of years, actually. In 2007 was when I really started formulating, you know, putting things down on paper about the show. I made the art image for the show and stuff. I interview people from across Canada, people that are doing good things in their community or for the country. Right now, I'm working on the November edition, and I interviewed just actually while I was in Newmarket on November 1st. I did my third interview for my series about young people who are doing good things, young people under the age of 13. And so now I beeped again. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hello.
So I interviewed a 5-year-old boy, and he's been doing fundraising and some really neat things to help project in his community. And so I went to his home, I met him and his parents, and we had a lovely little visit. And That's the show I'm working on right now. Before that, I interviewed two other young people. Both of them were 12, and they started their projects when they were 10. They started fundraising for a particular cause, all of their own volition, when they were 10, and both of them worked on their project for 2 years. And so that's...
What are you going to do for the next big Last Supper? Oh, yeah, right. Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
You are back.
I are back.
When you were talking about those young people, it comes to mind, I have some in my life that I know of and deal with. Younger people, let's say 18 to 25, have a really difficult time in this day and age in Canada, the economy in North America even, more difficult time, let's say, than in the past, getting a job. But imagine if you have been fundraising and helping your community, your country, and the world since the age of 5 or 10 or 12. Do you think anybody like that is going to have a hard time getting a job? Because employers are looking for something the unique in this day and age. They probably get, because of the internet, 50 to 100 applications for every job. And if you've never lifted a finger to help anyone in your community or your country or the world, and you're competing with someone since the age of 5 who's stopped not thinking about themselves, is out there helping others, you don't have a chance, because those people are setting themselves above others just by the way that they reach out and help others, isn't it?
Well, it shapes them. It makes for a different quality of person, and that will reflect on all of the people around them. So this little boy who is fundraising, the little people in his class are, you know, more aware now of what fundraising is and the cause he's working on. The other fellow, Dylan, his name, my first interview, he grew his hair for 2 years to raise money for his older brother's friend who has leukemia. And even though he's not close to this fellow who has leukemia, once he heard about the problem, he just decided, I'm growing my hair and I'm going to raise funds. And over 2 years, he grew his hair. He was ridiculed at school. He took a lot of flack. And he raised $1,000 and also donated his hair. And he has affected so many people by doing that. And that's what I want to really share with my audience and you know, just to give some hope and positive ideas and concepts out there, because everyone's really stressed and afraid right now about so many things that are happening on the planet, you know, everything that's happening with food and water and finances and health. And being a person who is challenged by all of those things, I feel that if I can help other people get their message out there, if I can help them feel appreciated or accomplish something through my Vocal Vibe show, and also, you know, let listeners hear that, hey, good stuff is actually happening out there. You know, there is something good happening. So hold on, you know, you can get through another day. And so Vocal Vibes is to, you know, send those good vibes out there. You know, I have a I call it views, variety, and voices. And so that's really what it is. Every interview is different, and talking to different people, different career paths, different projects, there's always something interesting for me to learn and to experience, and I want to pass that on to my audience.
Exactly. And in this day and age, it gets harder to find these positive stories because, as we know, with the internet, radio, and television, they don't talk about these things. And so if that's all you focus on as a person, you would think that this world is filled with negative, horrible situations and circumstances. But through a show like yours, Vocal Vibes, you find out that no, there are probably the majority of people are positive people making a contribution to the world. And so it's nice for people to learn about those people so that it can negate a lot of the negative press about silly, stupid people doing dumb things.
Yeah.
And, you know, it can really give you a better view of life than the media, which gives you a view of the 5% of the population that are just nuts and shouldn't even
2%.
Be written about anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's what I figure. You know, people can make a cup of tea or a cup of coffee and sit down and listen to a radio show and, you know, hopefully walk away feeling better and refreshed and want to get out and do something.
Exactly. Now, when I met you at the Arthritis Self-Management Teacher's Course, I learned about the Icicle Hands Project. So please share that with the audience, because that is an interesting project that you started a number of years ago, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. The Icicle Hands Project is based on my book, my children's book, Icicle Hands and Icicle Knees.
Yes.
And essentially what I do is I get the book into hands of literacy organizations and children's literacy primarily, but some adult literacy organizations, so that they can, it's helpful to them. And organizations like that often don't have a budget for books, and so I work with people to get the Icicle Hands book to these literacy organizations, and a dollar from every book that I sell is donated to the Arthritis Society. So the project is to help spread awareness about arthritis and the fact that children can get it too. And also it's a fundraiser for the Arthritis Society, and also helping literacy organizations, giving them a tool that they can use to help children learn to read.
Wow, so one project that is positively affecting three different things with the literacy, the awareness, and the fundraising for the Arthritis Society. What a great thing, and children's books are a lot of fun, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. The Icicle Hands book is very colorful. Grant Weiss, he's a Canadian artist. He did the illustrations. It's extremely colorful and fun, and I was so glad that I was able to publish it. Just like my new book that's coming out here at the end of November, the Healing Circle Puzzles book. That's been 11 years in the making, and I'm finally at the publishing stage, and I'm getting that same sense of excitement as I did with the Icicle Hands and Icicle Knees book, that, okay, it's really going to be published, and I'm birthing this thing into the universe, and boy, oh boy, it's a real journey.
Tell us about that book. What kind of puzzles are they?
Well, they're word search puzzles. I love doing puzzles. I do cryptograms and anagrams and word searches. And in 2001, when I got home from hospital, I was in the hospital for a month, and when I got home and I was convalescing, you know, I was pretty disabled, I couldn't go out at all. I had to have home care because I was not able to take care of myself. And so I did a lot of puzzles. And at some point in doing word puzzles, I started getting ideas for my own puzzles. And from there, I would spend hours and days just researching themes and concepts, and all of a sudden I found myself making a puzzle book. And so it's called Healing Circle Puzzles, and all of the puzzles are in circles. Circles has, you know, the family circle, the circle of life, healing circles. Circles were extremely significant to me at that time, as well as they are now. And so all of the word searches are in circles, and they all have themes of things to do with healing and wellness and positive things. And there's also art in the book from Canadian artists, and the art is all themed around circles.
Neat. And so the artists are Canadian artists?
Yes. Yes, I have two photographers from the UK who have pictures in there. Primarily, though, the bulk of the artists are Canadian, and they have done original works specifically for the book. I'm so excited to get this book in my hands because it is so vivid and it just is alive, and the puzzles, every single puzzle has a quote that accompanies it, and there are extra letters in the puzzles that you find a missing word in the quote. And again, the quotes are all about, you know, something maybe just to uplift or make us think a little deeper about life in the world and ourselves, and you know, essentially it was my healing tool. And I, as I was making the puzzles and you know, the hours and hours that I would spend in my little house creating these puzzles, I dreamt that someday somebody might be holding my book, and maybe they're in the hospital or maybe they're at home and they can't get out of the house. And hopefully, you know, it will help them heal in some way. It'll uplift their day or make them feel better about their situation. And so I'm so close to that point, Tom. I'm so close to other people holding the book and doing the puzzles. And I'm just bursting with excitement.
Wow, an 11-year project, when it finally comes to fruition, that is an exciting accomplishment. And so even before it's out, I can hear the energy in your voice about how exciting it is to get that actually published and in people's hands after the initial idea 11 years ago.
Yeah. And it's now, any day now.
Nice. And so we'll make sure to put a link to that on the website page I create so people can find out about that and order the book. Now, just to finish the show, talk a little bit about, because where we met was, as I said, training with the Arthritis Society to lead those arthritis self-management programs. And I know when I do, and on those days, which is every day, when I have that pain and fatigue and have been in the place where you have been, where you just wish you would die.
Yeah.
When I lead those courses, I feel that, this is a great purpose for me to be able to share some of these ideas and strategies to deal with arthritis with people who maybe aren't as familiar with it as you and I are. So how do you feel? What kind of experiences do you have and people that you meet when you've led these ASMP programs?
I've had fantastic experiences, and I've been incredibly blessed to meet strong, special people. There have been a couple of people that were, when they first walked into the first day meeting of the class, you know, they could hardly move. You could just see the despair in their face. And as the weeks went on, you could see them coming out of that and starting to move back into a little bit of life and hope. And then by the end of the 6-week course, you know, they're beaming and they're so thrilled. There was one fellow, he desperately needed a cane. His doctors had been telling him for a long time, you need a cane. And he had been bucking it, you know, refused. And by the 4th week, he came in with a cane. and him and his wife would come together, and he walked in with that cane, and everybody in the class were just so proud of him. And he himself, you could see that he had shifted into a new space. He didn't feel like an invalid. He didn't want a cane because he was going to feel like an invalid. He was going to feel old and disabled.
And that's fun, isn't it, when people, you give them some hope, and they also find out that there's other people experiencing and thinking the same things that they are. And, you know, I've been in the same position where I wouldn't want to use a cane or a walker or anything like that. And then I found out once you do start using those that people are really nice to you. And so they help you open doors. They let you in front of lines. And so many great things come out of those experiences when you learn about how to cope with your disease. You learn about it not being a horrible thing to have to use some of these aids that are available for people with arthritis. And so, you know, I'm sure you and I certainly would recommend anyone who's got arthritis of any form, who's been recently diagnosed with arthritis, that they find out from the Arthritis Society, and their website is easy to find. It's arthritis.ca. But go to their website, find out what courses, what programs, what workshops are available in their area, including the Arthritis Self-Management Program. There's also a chronic pain management workshop, which helps people to learn various ways of dealing with the chronic pain and fatigue that people with arthritis face. Also, there's one called Exercise Control Over Arthritis, which teaches people about the necessity of exercise for arthritis, because it's kind of the last thing you want to do when you're suffering extreme pain is be involved in exercises. You need to do that so that you maintain the mobility in your joints as well as the strength in your muscles to help deal with the pain. And so, you know, again, the Arthritis website, Arthritis Society website, is a tremendous, tremendous resource, and it's easy to remember the website. It's just arthritis.ca. And so recommend people go to that website, find out what workshops, what there is in their area that can help them deal with their arthritis. And so thank you so much for your time today, Cindy. The call, your cell phone call has dropped again. And so I know you're not on the line, but thank you for sharing with our audience today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.